Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the regular meeting of the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. Audience members, I want to start by asking you to please silence your electronic devices. I would also like to remind you that in addition to the audience in this room, we have people watching and listening online, so please consider your language in comments and testimony today. Today's meeting is a hybrid board meeting. Some presenters and guests will appear in person, and some will appear virtually. For those presenting virtually, please mute your mic when not speaking, and when presenting, make sure to unmute your mic and turn on your camera. For those joining us in person to provide public testimony or present, please turn your mic on when you begin speaking so the green light is showing, and off when you've completed your remarks so the red light is showing. For all presenters, please state your name for the record before speaking or responding to questions. As a reminder, we do limit the number of people to speak during regular board meetings on non-agenda items during public testimony, and testimony on regular agenda items needs to pertain to the subject matter under consideration. The board clerk and I will be monitoring adherence to these board rules. May I have a motion on the consent calendar? Second. Commissioner Brim Edwards moves, Commissioner Singleton seconds. Approval of the consent calendar.
Sorry, Commissioner Muir?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The consent calendar is approved.
Opportunity for public comment on non-agenda matters. This is a time for the board to hear public testimony, not for board deliberation. When it is your turn to speak, I'll call your name and unmute you or call you to the presenter's table. I'll set a timer for 3 minutes when you begin speaking and announce when your time is up, at which point please wrap up your sentence. Chair, we have six people signed up for verbal testimony. I'll call four folks at a time. Injured and pissed off, Marisa Cade, Jean Bishop, and Knowledge Murphy.
My name's Injured and Pissed Off, and I talked yesterday to City Hall about equal protection under the law is what I failed to communicate yesterday. Seven dog attacks on my service animal, ignoring the Oregon State service animal laws. It's against the law to even interfere with a service animal, let alone injuring it, and getting injured even worse at the hospital, or as bad. I had a broken hip and two fractures to my spinal cord, and they were just gonna discharge me with a pair of crutches after the first hour. And I told them that I couldn't move, so they decided that they'd take more x-rays and found that the left hip had been broke and ignored the spinal cord injuries. And the 10-second balance test on Google explains that it's, I guess, difficult for a person to stand on one leg and to lift their other leg 12 inches off the ground and maintain that for 10 seconds. Well, I can't even do that with 2 feet. It's the reason why I use a rollator, and constant pain and memory problems. I'm in a care facility currently, and that's being paid for by Medicaid, apparently, for the last, this will be the fourth month, June. I don't want to stay in a care facility, and I don't have housing. They stole everything that I had, even the hospital bed. They needed it worse than I did, apparently. Belts, pants, shoes, everything, photographs, and expect me to move back and thank them. Bullshit. And last week I talked about scandals and SBS. SBS stands for super bullshit. I think I've made that clear enough.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the commission. My name is Marisa Cade, and I am a registered lobbyist in the state of Oregon and soon to be here in Multnomah County. My sobriety date is December 19th, 2013, and I have the honor of representing a coalition of recovery service providers here in the Multnomah County area. There's over 20 of us who gather around a table each month many of the executive leadership folks at that table, if not all of them, also have lived experience of homelessness, addiction, incarceration, healthcare, behavioral health, and mental health issues. We know from experience that for some people leaving carceral settings, those leaving hospitals, residential treatment, detox, the sobering center, those entering deflection and diversion, and some of the people in our shelters right now, that the next step on their path is recovery housing. I have a personal story about homelessness and addiction as well. The night in 2017 when my younger brother died from a heroin overdose was the night I found out that my siblings' lives had been taken over by heroin. In high school, my brother and I used to make jokes about the 27 Club, and he was 32. My brother's death did not have the impact on my sister that my mother and I prayed it would. After his death, she took to the streets to use. Without family around, she went further and further down the scale. She lived in a little tent next to a dirt path. The county sheriff knew my family and my sister, and they picked her up regularly, and one day they were able to charge her. In jail, she was given the opportunity to go to treatment. When she violated her treatment order and went back to jail, she got one more chance from the judge, and she took it. The last house on the block for my sister was a recovery house. She learned how to get a job, clean up her record, and get her license back. She found community, and I got my sister back. Our community needs more recovery housing. More people need their sister back. When you invest in recovery, you give a university their valedictorian. You give the future director of the Homeless Services Department the master's degree they need so they can take that role and change the future. You can't legislate recovery. We agree. But there are not enough recovery housing beds right now for the people who want them and need them. They cannot do it alone, and many of them cannot do it without a clean, safe, sober home. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Gene Bishop, and I live in Multnomah County, District 3. Let me start today by first saying thank you to this board for supporting the local HIV positive community over the years. Today is HIV Long-Term Survivors Awareness Day. June 5th, 1981 is the first time the CDC published information about a mysterious deadly disease affecting gay men. It would later be labeled AIDS, acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. Excuse me. And much later, we would learn anybody could be infected with the virus that causes AIDS, HIV. 44 years and still no cure. I am an HIV long-term survivor. I became a person living with HIV over 28 years ago. I'm also HIV undetectable. Another way to say I can't pass the virus on to others. I'm undetectable thanks to the availability of medications. I have survived. I'm also a client of the Cascade AIDS Project and a participant of its program, Aging Well. But Aging Well is more than a program, it's a community. One which welcomed me with open arms soon after moving to Portland at the end of 2020. Aging Well, through social and educational events, resource navigation, and advocacy opportunities, has given me the alternatives to isolation and loneliness, which affect older adults living with HIV more so than our HIV-negative peers. I am actually doing more than just surviving, I am thriving. As a 68-year-old gay man living with HIV, I'm very thankful we do have the medications to manage the disease and make our lives much better than in those early days. But we have no cure. And one thing many people do not understand, even at undetectable levels, the HIV virus can accelerate the aging process. Very low levels of the virus can still affect the cardiovascular system, bones, joints, even brain health. With the current administration in DC hell-bent on eliminating funding for HIV organizations and even HIV research for that cure, local support for programs like Aging Well is more important than ever. Again, I appreciate your all's past, current, and anticipated future support. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Checking for Knowledge Murphy, Addie Smith, and I'm not seeing Karen Cheery online, so I'm checking to see. Okay. We have Latoya Lovely and Charles Johnson.
Good morning.
Latoya Lovely. I'm Latoya Lovely, an artist and muralist and a mother of a 9-year-old artist who happens to be my tiny best friend. And we oppose cutting funding to RAC as part of budget amendments 10 and 11 and urge the county to protect this critical $300,000 investment in arts and culture. This bestie of mine has watched his mother leave a job with Portland Public School due to racial discrimination and become a full-time artist and a homeschooling parent with the help of Regional Arts and Culture Council. I'm the artist you see before you today because of my magic and because of RAC. There is no other organization that has impacted my artistry in the same way that RAC has. And I personally know that my story resonates with many artists within our community. As a baby in my art career, with about 3 things listed on my resume, RAC saw something worth investing in as they welcomed my very first portrait into their portable artworks collection. This piece was about the magic of motherhood, and they've watched me with intention and care as I mother. I curated my first group exhibition during the pandemic with my son painting alongside me, collaborated on my first large-scale mural project with James, painting alongside me, and created my very first digital work, which wraps around a new development, which is La Clinica de Fernhill in the Cully neighborhood, with James as my documentarian, all with their support. With the opportunities provided to our family by RAC, I've gone on to residencies, museum exhibitions, where my son was assistant preparator, other large-scale projects bigger than I'd ever thought I'd imagine for myself, although little Latoya always knew she'd get to color for the rest of her life. Y'all, it's wild that I get to be a voice for the community, beautify spaces, be an advocate, and stand for social justice through my art because of support from this organization. The fact that I got to take my son on a field trip to the grand opening of La Clinica de Fernhill to see mommy's art larger than life, where the lesson was quality healthcare, community rallying together to meet a need, celebrating their fight for access, and beyond. RAC supports artists in a unique, intentional, and honest way. They were doing it well before the murder of George Floyd, which was when many organizations here lifted their veils to see Black and Indigenous artists. We trust RAC. Even outside of projects where we've been to work together, I've been able to seek advice, resources, receive valuable feedback, all of it. I don't even think they know how important they have been to our individual lives. They are invaluable. Supporting them is vital to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be back. I'm Charles Bridgecrane Simca Johnson, and I think we'll just review some of the things we've heard. Of course, we heard about the, I don't think it's an overstatement to say, desperate need for recovery housing. And I hope that as the Homeless Service Department goes through its leadership transition, I didn't get an email from them. I don't know if they have 3 interim people at the top, which would match the email I got from the County Health Department, which I'm not sure has any non-interim people at the top now that Heather Mearsall is leaving. But anyway, getting back to the housing and recovery housing, in the past few months here locally, we maybe have improved on in honesty, even though that's not the situation in D.C. I think it was April or late March, we started talking about a much larger number of homeless people than what we've been using before. And, you know, it's optimistic to think that as Dan Fields leaves the joint office, HSD, that, you know, we can get one ultra-competent person and not have to have a lot of public talk and board meeting time. But I think actually what's called for is to meet those numbers head on, talk about the number that's over 10,000, which I think includes people that are couch surfing and alternatively housed, but not really in stable housing, versus I think over, at least we're honest now, about 6,000 people on the street. How many of those people have behavioral issues, whether it's substance abuse or something else, that means they won't be stable in non-permanent supportive housing? We can't just give them a check, put them in a place that's going to have to evict them within 3 months because their behaviors are too far for their neighbors to cope with. So I hope that in as early as July, we can see that come up on the board agenda. Of course, it's interesting because, you know, we're dealing with homelessness, but technically housing really was sort of the city's portfolio, plus we have Home Forward. So we have these weird silos where Portland city government has a housing bureau, the county does not. And then there's Home Forward, which I think maybe is a tri-county agency, actually, but it's confusing. and then switching over to another confusing situation, we have RAC, which in addition to working to help young artists develop, also is saddled with, I think, covering the storage bills for Abraham Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt. And of course, we leave that mostly over in the city. So maybe one of the things that needs to come across is a revamped approach to the arts. Portland City has its arts tax, which we know, I think a majority of that just goes to education in the schools. But there's so much improved collaboration we will hope to see in the next fiscal year. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Next online, we have Karen Cherry. Karen, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, I am. My name is Karen Cherry, and I'm speaking before you today as a business owner in District 1 and a representative of Stadiumhood, a team of community members that have endured significant challenges over the past few years. Despite our repeated testimonies to city, county, and state leaders, the Stadiumhood area has witnessed a troubling lack of meaningful change. If anything, it is getting much worse. Over the last 2 years, more than 15 businesses have closed or relocated from our area, including two just within the last 3 weeks. Another business has already confirmed it is moving from the area at the end of July, and another confirmed closure by the end of the year. These moves are because of safety in our area. And we are deeply concerned that this trend will continue unchecked. It is disheartening to see such an alarming situation unfold without adequate concern from our leaders. Since Monday, May 26, I have experienced 20 incidents at my convenience store, ranging from shoplifting and threats to vandalism, possible identity theft, counterfeit money, and graffiti. I still have to file over 10 police reports online as we do not have enough officers to address the escalating concerns in our community, nor any place to take the offenders. It is not just about my business. It reflects a broader issue of safety and livability that affects us all. Most people won't report crimes because they know nothing will be done. All offenders should be arrested, jailed, and prosecuted. Our small group of dedicated community members has tirelessly worked to improve our neighborhood by organizing cleanups, assisting the police with reports of crime/drug activity, and advocating for change through testimony, news, and social media. We deserve leaders who will listen to our concerns and take decisive action. This is a genuine crisis. Shifting responsibility to other organizations or agencies is not a viable solution. I urge you to take immediate action to address the challenges we face. This includes opening more jail beds to manage the criminal elements on our streets and ensuring full funding for the district attorney's office to include the auto theft task force. I also invite Commissioner Moyer to spend an hour with me in the Stadiumhood neighborhood, engaging with my customers and neighbors, her constituents. This firsthand experience will provide invaluable insights into the pressing issues we face and the challenges needed to restore safety and livability in our community. We seek your support and commitment to enact meaningful change. Together, we can make Stadium Hood a place where businesses thrive and residents feel safe and valued. Thank you for your time.
Just checking again for Knowledge Murphy and Addie Smith. Chair, that is all the public testimony we have for today on non-agenda items.
Thank you, Marina. Can we move on to R1? All right. We will recess as the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners and convene as the governing body for the Mid-County Street Lighting Service District number 14. And I am pleased to hand the gavel over to Commissioner Joan Simpson.
R1, resolution adopting the 2025-2026 budget for the Mid-Multnomah County Street Lighting Service District number 14 and making appropriations.
Great. Thank you, Marina. May I have a motion?
So moved.
I have a first by Commissioner Brim Edwards, second by Commissioner Moyer.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Britta Shinsky. I use she, her pronouns. Here with me is Chet Hagen, and we're from the Department of Community Services. I am here asking for your approval of this resolution adopting the fiscal year 2025 to 2026 budget for the Mid-Multnomah County Street Lighting Service District number 14. This budget provides the district with necessary appropriations to support operations and capital. On May 1st, you convened as the district budget committee and approved the budget as submitted. The approved budget was submitted to the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission for their review. TSCC notified us on May 28th that they had completed their review of the approved budget and certified that they have no objections or recommendations to make with respect to this budget. The district approved budget was also posted to the county's main webpage and a copy posted in the local newspaper as required by local budget law. No questions or comments were received. The district fiscal year 2026 budget is set at $2 million with $650,000 for capital works on light replacement projects. $880,000 of this budget is assigned as an unappropriated balance and will be held to support future capital work the district is planning. With your approval this morning, this budget resolution will be submitted to TSCC and the Multnomah County Assessor, along with a list of 738 properties in the district. We're here to answer any of your questions.
Great. Marie, do we have any public testimony first, and we'll have questions?
No, we didn't receive any public testimony. Okay. We have one public testimony from Charles Johnson.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Johnson, come up and step back. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for listening to me earlier. The reason I'm back is complicated, but when it comes to however much faith people have left in government, we're sitting here. They did, I think, I couldn't tell if it was a $2 million increase or a $2 million total. But for people who are paying attention to their local government, they have, even looking at the four different links that are a part of this electronic agenda, it's very difficult for us to know where the heck are the other 13 lighting districts and why are they not up here? Of course, we know that the administration in Washington is wrong about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so while you all wanna quickly get this through and keep these people's lights, street lights on, you know, there's at least 13 other districts, and I think that for you to competently do your job, not just as the lighting district, but I think some people, hopefully not just me, alone policy geek nerd, would like to know
what the heck goes on generally. Of course, since we're talking about street lighting, we're talking about a monetary movement from the public taxes either to PGE or to Pacific Power, although energy is a crazy game now. There could be all kinds of other corporations that could be eligible to take that money. So I hope that the body that is you as you're convened now, plus the people, they don't have to address any of that right now. We can vote yes and keep the lights on. But it would have been an interesting opportunity to build public confidence and engagement. Thanks very much.
Great question. Thank you, Mr. Charles. We'll move to the board for questions. Commissioner Moyer. Commissioner Singleton.
I just want to appreciate you adding my question around any public comment or engagement around the budget. So thank you for bringing that into your presentation.
Chair.
I just want to thank you for all the work that goes into creating these budgets. They're small compared to the bigger budgets that we're going to be doing next week, but just as important to make sure this work gets done. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Commissioner Bruman Edwards.
Thank you.
Marina, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye.
It passes. We're going to adjourn. We will adjourn as the governing body for Mid-County Street Lighting Service District number 14 and convene as the Dunthorpe Riverdale Sanitary Service District number 1.
R2, resolution adopting the 2025-2026 Dunthorpe Riverdale Sanitary Service District number 1 budget and making appropriations.
So moved.
Approval of R2. Did we receive any public test? Oh, wait, we haven't had. I'm sorry. Britta Shinsky, and Chet Hagen. The floor is yours. Oh, okay. Good morning again, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Britta Shinsky. I use she, her pronouns, and here with me today is Chet Hagen. We're from the Department of Community Services. We are here this morning asking for your approval of this resolution adopting the fiscal year 2025-2026 budget for Dunthorpe Riverdale Service District. This budget will provide the district with necessary appropriations to support both operations and capital. On May 1st, you convened as the District Budget Committee and approved the budget as submitted. The approved budget was submitted to the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission for their review and comment. TSCC notified us on May 28th that they had completed their review and consideration of the budget. They certified that they have no objections or recommendations. For public's notice, the district's approved budget was posted to the county's main webpage. In addition, a copy of the budget was posted in the local newspaper. Both of the noticing practices fulfill the requirements of local budget law. No questions or comments were received. The district's fiscal year 2026 budget is set at $6.8 million, with $3.8 million for the reconstruction of the Elk Rock Pump Station and $805,000 for materials and services. For fiscal year 2026, the district will increase our assessment from $210 per month to $240 per month, which is a 14% increase from the previous fiscal year. With your approval today, the district will submit the adopted budget to TSCC by July 15th and will also file the resolution along with a list of district properties to both Clackamas and Multnomah County assessors, requesting approval of the resolution to adopt the fiscal year 2025-2026 budget. The district will file the resolution and a list of properties as well. We're here to answer any of your questions. Do we have any public testimony on this item?
No, we do not.
Shocking. I'm going to call on commissioners. Where were we?
Thank you. And thank you for, again, bringing in my question about any public comment. I am interested to chat more about how community engagement happens. I feel like if I was a part of this, I would have something to say about this increase. So we can talk about that offline, though, and I'd love to connect with you, Commissioner, and just make sure we feel like we're doing due diligence on engagement on these.
Yep.
Thank you.
Chair. Yep, just a thank you.
Same, thank you.
The board clerk will now take a roll call vote.
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards? Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The resolution is adopted. Thank you.
R3, resolution approving a petition to annex a single parcel of land to the Dunthorpe Riverdale Service District pursuant to ORS 198.857 and authorizing the chair to provide the district's endorsement on the petition.
Thank you. May I have a motion?
So moved.
All right. Commissioner Brim Edwards moves. Commissioner Jones Dixon seconds. Approval of R3. Chet? It's the Chet show today. Go ahead.
It's very exhilarating being up here so long. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Chet Hagen. I'm a program manager and administrator of the Dunthorpe Riverdale Service District, and I use he, him pronouns. Today, I'd like to introduce a petition to annex into the service district by property owners whose home is outside the current district boundary. These annexations are governed by Oregon Statute Chapter 198 and Metro Code 3.09. The property we're considering for annexation is located adjacent to the far southern end of the current district boundary in unincorporated Clackamas County at 400 Southwest Edgecliff Road. I know it's an unusual situation asking the Multnomah County Board to approve an annexation in another county, but since the service district provides sewer service to properties in both Multnomah and Clackamas County, and the majority of properties are within Multnomah County, our board acts as the governing body for properties in both counties. The property owners reside in a single-family home, which is currently not connected to a public sewer system. And in order for us to provide sanitary sewer service, the district is required by state law to annex this single 0.95-acre parcel, and then we can permit construction and connect it to our public sanitary sewer system. District staff recommend that the district board approve the petition for annexation. The district has the capacity to provide sanitary sewer service to the property from nearby infrastructure. The development aligns with the City of Lake Oswego's comprehensive plan, and the petition is complete and complies with statute and Metro Code. With that, I'm ready to answer any questions that the district board may have.
Thank you so much. Did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, we did not.
All right, any questions by the commissioners on this item? Okay, thank you so much, Chet, for the presentation. Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards? Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The resolution is adopted. We will adjourn as the governing body for the Dunthorpe Riverdale Sanitary Service District Number 1 and reconvene as the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners.
R4, resolution approving the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission FY 2025-2026 fund budget.
May I have a motion?
Second.
All right, Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Brim Edwards seconds. Approval of R4. For this item, I'm turning things over to Commissioner Moyer as the county's MHCRC liaison to open the item and provide any information she'd like.
Sure. I represent Multnomah County on this commission and was present and participated in the conversation related to how the funds from the franchise. The franchise fees for the use of our public right-of-way would be allocated. I will allow our presenters to go into detail, but you know, I think it is worth noting that this is a diminishing pot of money, and so we are unable to continue to fund every project at the same level. I think there are active conversations about both the future of the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, but also what we are feasibly able to continue to fund long-term So I do anticipate in the next few years, we may be looking at a shift away from some of these grant programs because we just won't have the funds available to both support our local cable access, which is Metro East and Open Signal, and provide community grants. So I just put that forward that, again, this is a reduced amount of money. We're unable to grant at the levels we previously could. And then there are going to have to be some conversations about what is possible in the future as revenues continue to shrink.
Thank you, Commissioner Moyer. Appreciate that. And we have Douglas and Seema here to talk more about this. So welcome to the board, and I'll turn it over to you.
Hi, Commissioners, Chair, good morning. My name is Andrew Spear, and I work for the City of Portland, and as part of my role, staff the Mount Hood Regulatory Commission and do compliance work, and was here last with the Comcast agreement with you last month. And I was wondering, did we have the slide deck for this item?
And Andrew, sorry, I called you by the wrong name.
No worries. This is Douglas, actually. So he'll introduce himself in a minute. But I'll just kick us off here. We are here to present to you the fiscal year 2025-26 MHCRC budget for recommendation from the commission for approval by the county commission. And I'll just, next slide, please. Just a little bit of level setting. The commission was formed in 1992 under an IGA between the cities listed there on the last bullet and the county. As part of our work, we maintain and regulate the cable franchise agreements on behalf of the member jurisdictions. And we also collect franchise fees and PEG fees from the cable providers, in this case, Comcast and Ziply. And then we distribute those back out to the member jurisdictions on a quarterly basis. We have prepared the budget, and Douglas will be presenting the budget pieces in the next slide. So I'll turn it over to him.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Douglas Imaralu, MHCRC's finance manager, and also the finance and budget lead for the Community Technology Division at the City of Portland's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'll be walking us through the budget and highlighting a couple of things that we think is important for this commission to hear. So this slide presents a high-level summary of the important components of the MHCRC's annual budget process. The commission's budget is required to be approved by all seven member jurisdictions, and revenues for the commission are primarily derived from franchise fees and public educational and governmental fees, typically known as PEG fees. Typically, the MHCRC fund budget includes operating expenses, community media center grants, and other grants made to community organizations. The budget process also includes some strategic planning as well. Next slide, please. On this slide, we kind of summarize the fiscal year 26 fund budget with some numbers. Total fund resources are estimated at $4.7 million. Beginning fund balance would be $6.3 million, making a total of just about $11 million in resources. Compared to the current fiscal year, revenues are projected to decline by as much as $773,000, which is a reflection of continuing declining of franchise fees. As highlighted in the previous slide, in fiscal year 26, the strategic planning process is focused on addressing industry changes and also declining franchise fee revenue. This process has been more pertinent in recent years and even more important in this year. However, it is important to note here that revenue sources remain unchanged even as subscriber counts continue to go down. Those two things have a kind of direct correlation. Just for example, in 2022, the subscriber count was about 100,000. In 2023, it's 88,000. And in 2024 calendar year, it was 75,000. So there's a continuing decline. Next slide, please. This slide breaks down the revenue categories in the MHCRC fund budget. We'll be starting with the two major sources, which is the franchise fee and also franchise fees and also the PEG revenues. And we'll also talk a little bit about some nominal revenue sources as well, our interest end fund, and also supplemental budgets that comes, carryover balances that supplement the budget. So franchise fees basically are gross revenues from the cable providers. It's a percentage of gross revenues from cable providers. and it funds the operating costs of the commission and the CMCs. The CMCs are the Community Media Center, Open Signal, and Metro East, which provide resources and support for production and distribution of community-based media programming. So those franchise fees, for example, pay for the cost of Metro East providing coverage for government meetings like this. PEG fees, on the other hand, are designated for annual capital allocation to Open Signal and Metro East, and they represent 2.5% of a cable provider's gross revenue, and they are dedicated to supporting local community media and technology access. The MECRC also derives revenue from open operating budget appropriation, which is a combination of the City of Portland's special appropriation to the MECRC and also the East County.
That's okay. Sort of a musical interlude for the presentation.
So I was talking about special appropriations from the City of Portland's budget, annual special appropriation to the MECRC, and also the East County jurisdiction contribution to annual operating costs. Those are some of the other revenues we derive the MECRC fund budget from. Yields from the Commission Fund Interest Fund also funds the budget, and I'm happy to say that in the last couple of years, those yields have performed really well, and also carryover balances from previous years supplement the fund budget. Next slide, please. On this slide, we attempt to sort of break down graphically, franchise fees estimates for fiscal year 26. And I'm happy to say that Multnomah County will receive about just under $50,000 in franchise fee, which represents about 19% of total franchise fee for fiscal year 26. It's important to note here that these amounts actually are largely driven by declining subscriber counts in each jurisdiction. So as the subscriber counts continue to go down, these fees will continue to go down as well. Next slide. On this slide, I try to go a little bit into the expenditure categories for fiscal year 26. The budget expenditure typically includes franchise fees disbursements, which are quarterly transfers to the general fund of each respective jurisdictions. As we showed in the previous slide, Multnomah County will be receiving just a little under $50,000. MECRC operating costs, which covers staff, legal, admin, and compliance costs. Community media expenditure, which draws from PEG fees and franchise fees to fund operating costs and other capital expenditure from Open Signal and Metro East. And also, just wanted to include here that these CMCs, Open Signal and Metro East, provide services including gavel-to-gavel coverage of council meetings like this one. The commission also plans to invest $1 million in community grants to support local nonprofits and other educational and public access media projects. Next slide. On this slide, I'll talk a little bit about the details of those appropriations to Open Signal and Metro East. So Metro East is estimated to receive about $1.6 million to be allocated to them, $699 to fund operation fees for coverage, production of media, admin and other associated costs, and the capital pays for equipment purchases, capital projects, and maintenance, and that's under just a little under $1 million. Open Signal will receive $2.4 million allocated for operating costs, $1.4 million. It's important to note here that that $1.4 million is not coming out directly from the MECRC's budget, but is a grant agreement with Open Signal on behalf of the City of Portland to pay for operating costs for covering City of Portland's council, gavel-to-gavel coverage, and also community meetings for the City of Portland. Open Signal will also receive about $1 million, a little over $1 million in capital allocation for fiscal year 26. All of these numbers are captured in the budget overview on slide 4, and I'm happy to take more questions, but at this time I'll pause and turn it back over to Andrew.
Next slide, please. Douglas mentioned this, but I just thought it was relevant to highlight the $1 million community grant budget allocation is similar to last year's allocation or this current fiscal year's allocation. So we're able to have that continuity of money available to pass on grants to community groups and organizations who are producing public education or government content that will then be transmitted onto the PEG channels. So then there's also below there some characteristics of the grantees over this past fiscal year and what they've been able to produce for our communities. I think it's a really great opportunity that that community groups have to access these funds and then produce media for local community to be broadcast on our PEG channels. Next slide, please. Douglas touched a little bit on the strategic planning efforts, and Commissioner Moyer also highlighted some of the trends and issues that we're facing in the cable market. I think, you know, we want to be mindful and keep the jurisdictions aware of what's going on. Ziply Fiber, for instance, the second bullet there, is exiting the cable market at the end of this calendar year. They will be continuing to provide internet and phone service, but it's just a continued trend of the realities of cable and cable subscription. And then also just Douglas was highlighting the year-over-year, quarter-over-quarter decline of cable subscribers impacting the franchise fee revenue and subsequently PEG revenue that we receive, which funds, right, both the staffing and operations of the MHCRC, but is also impacting jurisdictions as part of the declining revenue for franchise fees generally. So those are all issues that the commission is taking up in its strategic planning process right now. And so we're hoping to have that come to a little bit of clarity by the end of this calendar year, hopefully. Next slide, please. So what are we asking for today? We're asking the commission, the MHCRC, has recommended to the jurisdictions the approval of the FY25-26 budget, and we are here just asking for your approval as a member jurisdiction of that, of the MHCRC. And I think we're just, we want all the member jurisdictions to understand that we're working on stability as staff to keep as much towards grant funding of the community grants, and also recognizing that, you know, costs continue to increase. So balancing that over time and keeping the commission informed of those tension points and what the realities look like on a forward going basis. But I will pause there and take any questions.
Thank you so much. Appreciate all the information in this presentation. Did we have any public testimony on this?
Yes, Chair. We had two people sign up, Seth Ring and Charles Johnson.
So if you wouldn't mind just sitting in that seats right behind you, and then we'll call you back up for commissioner's questions. Thank you. You got it.
Okay. Right. I'm Seth Ring, Director of Education Volunteers with Metro East Community Media. Some of you probably know John Lugton. I think that maybe Megan and Vince have met with him, so thank you for doing that. I'm mostly here just to say thank you. You know, your support of the MHCRC directly supports us, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what Metro East does. Some of you probably know Emily. She lives in a closet back there. I kind of think of her like the Wizard of Oz, like doing magic behind the curtain. Have you met Emily? Well, you can meet her after this. Anyway, we just conducted a community needs assessment, and we sampled four groups. So we worked with Metro East volunteers and producers, interns, and our cohorts program participants, youth, community tabling events, and then nonprofit organizations for the most part. We got feedback on what people wanted to, you know, what they needed us for. And that was mostly to tell their own stories was a really important point. And that's part of the core of community media, is being able to tell your own story. It goes way back to the inception of it. And that's really important in this era, where a lot of times the people that get access to be able to do that have the means to do it. And the people that don't have access may not be able to tell their story and be part of the greater media landscape. We also found out that people were interested in our production services. About 64% of nonprofit organizations wanted to either make a show, a promotional piece about themselves to talk about their services, or create educational content. And we found out what kind of equipment people wanted, which was mostly cameras and laptops, iPads, things that they could check out and sort of be individually empowered to produce content, media content. They wanted to find out how to use social media. We actually work with, been working with the group Guerreras Latinas to work on social media content for small businesses. So part of that community needs assessment has been, how do we continue to serve our community and be relevant? And we just want you to know that we're still doing that, and we appreciate your support in helping us complete our mission. So thank you.
Thank you, Seth. Hello.
Thanks, y'all, for having me up here for another edition of Mansplaining But Gay. I think the best thing to do is to go macro. Commissioner Moyer already raised the fact that Comcast knows that Xfinity Wire is going to decline, and so Comcast is chasing money in other places. Of course, they're competing with wireless broadband from Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile, Metro PCS. So if we look at the Mounted Cable Regulatory Commission as existing for the purpose of community media, then we need to obviously go through the rigmarole of saying yes to this, but then having a comprehensive community media plan. Back before we called it Open Signal, we simply called it Portland Community Media. And so to do that, I guess this will most fall on the plates already of the, your very full plates for Commissioner Moyer and for Commissioner Brim Edwards, because we'd like to see the school systems, not just PPS, but all the school systems be able to get involved in community media expenditures. To keep having money for community media, you're going to have to do intergovernmental on the state and federal level. You're going to need to talk with Merkley and Wyden and Janelle Bidem about getting community media funded through a profits tax. We see the sad, not so sad because I have some issues about cable television as an existence in an enterprise. It might not be bad if it went away, except people's media diets are not getting any better. But while subscribers are going down, we would like to see community media. We need to find a way to tie funding for community media to the profits of these mega media corporations. So it wouldn't be a bad thing if in a year or two we come in and we say, oh, the Cable Regulatory Commission is phasing out because probably not viable until 2028. We have something better in place than the old system, which funds not just local community media, but we also know that NPR and thus OPB and PBS are also under threat. So you can't make more money come into this system. You know, if the fees were increased, that would just accelerate the movement of people going and buying little boxes of Wi-Fi that free them from being Xfinity cable customers. So it's a bad time for Commissioner Moyer to be on the plate because there's going to be a big systemic change here. But obviously it's a yes to pass this and keep community media going through for this next budget cycle.
Thank you. Appreciate the public testimony on this item. I'll invite our guests to come back up to the dais, and I'll open it up for questions from the board. Commissioner Singleton?
Thank you. I don't have any questions. I wanted to appreciate the work that went into what I saw out of Metro East and Open Signal, and I think particularly the really thoughtful process I saw Open Signal use that they document in here. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Commissioner Brim Edwards?
I don't have any questions. I do want to just share appreciation for flagging sort of future challenges. So just being in this seat often, the worst thing is to hear something when it's too late or sort of at the last minute. So appreciate you sharing the sort of future challenges and look forward to ways in which we can be helpful.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Jones Dixon.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Just curious, what did the three other cities or the four, what was their response
to this?
So we just presented to City of Fairview last night. City of Portland Finance Committee meeting is Monday, and then I forget the dates on the other jurisdictions, but you were one of the first two. But Fairview did pass it last night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I just want to say I'm going to be interested in tracking the cost impacts to Metro East with under the new Comcast contract that we approved a couple weeks ago. And as the revenues for the cable franchise continue to decline, especially if, as was noted, I think when we had that discussion, if Comcast proposes new fees that are going to have to be paid by the county or Metro East. So I just, you know, that's another thing that I want to make sure that we're paying attention to. Thank you, Commissioner Moyer, for your role in representing our board in this work. And looking, it sounds like, you know, we're very interested in future updates and next steps on all of this. So thank you. Thank you all for this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And a shout out to Emily Vidal, who does the great producing work for to make sure that these meetings get that get out to the public. So appreciate that too.
Thank you all.
All right, Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards? Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The resolution is adopted.
R5, requesting approval of a resolution to amend transportation on-call contract task order WSP-104 for the Broadway deck replacement project by an additional $1,334,651.93.
Thank you, Marina. Can I have a motion on this?
Second.
Commissioner Brim Edwards moves. Commissioner Moyer seconds. Approval of R5. All right. So this is coming before the board per the public contract review board rules, which require board action to approve contract amendments that are 33% or greater than the original contract for all contracts greater than $150,000. John, our Transportation Division Director, is here to speak to this resolution, so I will turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Vega Peterson, Commissioners. My name is John Henriksen. I'm the Transportation Division Director and the County Engineer in the Department of Community Services, and I use he, him pronouns. I'm here this morning to request approval of a resolution to amend the Transportation On-Call Contract Task Order WSP-104 for the Broadway Deck Replacement Project by $1,334,651.93. These funds will support adding construction services to the task order for WSP and their subcontractors to support the county's management of the construction phase of the Broadway Bridge deck replacement project. Previously, the task order only covered design-related services. 90% of the cost of this amendment will be covered with federal funds that we have been awarded for the project, and 10% with match from our bridge fund. The match from our bridge fund has been included in our capital program budget for fiscal year 2026. That's all I have for you this morning, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you so much, John. Marina, did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Chair, we did not.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the board? Commissioner Moyer.
Yeah, related to the federal funding involved, is that funding that we are confident will actually come to us?
Yes, it's been appropriated to us, and we have a notice to proceed from FHWA, so we're confident that we have those funds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions on this item? Okay. We need to have more babies to have this money.
Okay. I don't know how to control that.
Commissioner Singleton.
This can come as follow-up. I just am interested in how equity is being operationalized here and where those goals are at. But I know all that data exists in a different place, so I'm happy to take it on the email follow-up.
Great. We'll provide that, too.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards? Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The resolution is adopted. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
This was a D1, D4 day.
What is
just hear this for one side.
All right. We made it through that agenda really, really quickly, guys. So we have now we have time for board comments on non-agenda items. I will open it up to commissioners to see who has any items to discuss. Commissioner Jones-Dixon, we'll start with you.
I don't today. Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Brim Edwards? Commissioner Singleton?
Now you know I do.
I always have something. So I just wanted to make a couple comments about the budget and then also some of what we're seeing at the federal level around immigration. So to start with, there are no good cuts in a county budget. Our work here is ensuring that there's a safety net for our most vulnerable friends, families, and neighbors. And as I've heard from my constituents and agree, this is not about pitting homelessness against sustainability, against food insecurity, against healthcare. There just are simply no good cuts in our budget. And I've listened to folks who have emailed or come in for public comment or who show up at our meetings, and those I've run into just out and about in my community. And I take everybody's feedback seriously. What I'm presenting in my amendments are policy decisions to ensure that we move forward on housing justice and that people have access to the critical services that the federal government is divesting in making sure that we're protecting our most vulnerable. I want to be really clear that I value the importance of the work of the Office of Sustainability and that I do not support eliminating it. My proposed reductions in their budget simply reflects tough choices that we're facing in a very tight budget year. And I've proposed reductions across multiple departments in order to refund or restore funding to some critical safety net services. I want to talk more about ICE and them showing up in court. I think it's really important that folks know their rights. I will be sharing in my newsletter and social media some really important language that was shared with me on a call for public officials earlier this week to make sure that people know if their case is being terminated in court, that they should say that they are appealing it, they have the right to counsel. It sounds good for your case to be terminated was the message we received because you think it's over, but it's really one of those deceptive tactics that they're using to then arrest people in the hallway after they leave the courtroom. So I will share that Know Your Rights information with my fellow commissioners and the chair, and I hope that you all can help push out some of these this messaging because they're just accelerating tactics to, frankly, scare our community and people from showing up. And so I think it's just really important that we acknowledge their actions impact how people trust us as well as government, and that we continue to really show up for people and speak out against these federal actions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Really appreciate that. I know that this is an issue that's concerned to all of us, isn't it? It impacts all of our, well, I don't have a district, but the entire county and all of the districts as well. And it was really, really frightening and concerning to hear that those tactics are being used in the federal courthouse right here in downtown Portland. Commissioner Moyer.
Yeah, I want to thank Commissioner Singleton for that, and we'll also share that information. I wanted to acknowledge that today is World Pride Day. I think now more importantly than ever, I think it's important to show solidarity with the LGBTQ plus community, specifically right now, people who identify as transgender or gender nonconforming. What is happening in this country right now is scary for a lot of communities. And the very real results of the perpetuation of hate speech have been seen. And I want to, from the perspective of Multnomah County and from, my position as an openly queer person, to acknowledge the trauma of having to live with fear, which is not unique to the LGBTQ community, but they are experiencing it right now, as are other groups. And to the extent that we as elected officials can try to make people feel safe and wanted and valued in our community. I have appreciated my colleagues saying very similar things. We can't stop everything that's happening on a federal level, but we can do our very, very best to be a safe haven for all people who are the victims of an organized fear and hate campaign, and that's a lot of different communities. And I think it is incredibly important that even though those who are being targeted very tremendously, from religious minorities to immigrants to the LGBTQ population to the poor, that we have to view the struggles of each individual community as within a collective, and that we show support and solidarity for each other. Where I would hope that people will stand and defend my marriage, I also stand and defend people who have a right to seek asylum, who have a right to a fair immigration process that has due process involved in it, and the rampant profiling that is happening across this country. And so to the extent that it is of comfort and that which is within our control, I want to use today as LGBTQ World Pride Day to welcome all those who do not feel wanted in other communities. We would love to have your talent and gifts in our community.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Moyer. I really appreciate the discussions on these really important items. I think, you know, I think about what's happening at the federal level, and it really feels like violence in terms of the executive orders. We know the impact that that's having locally and across the country. We're seeing this with the budget that has been approved and really the harm that that is going to do to so many people who rely on the government, for the federal government, for food, for support. I think the impacts that we are seeing on to science, to research, to medicine, like those are doing harm for our country today and in the future. And I think the way that things are spoken about, the what is being promoted as right. I mean, we had two recent attacks just this week that were very anti-Semitic on the Jewish community, and that is real violence that's happening, and we know that's happening to the trans community and so many others. And so I think I just appreciate our chance to hold space for these conversations and these acknowledgments. And again, just, you know, we saw this in our proclamation ceremony, the values of Multnomah County, the way we are standing strong to support our communities, to support our immigrant and refugee communities, our Black community, so many others. And you know, I look forward to more opportunities for us to do that as a board. So thank you for that. I just wanted to finish up today just talk a little bit about yesterday's budget work session. I think that was an opportunity to gauge how the conversations are going to flow from now on. I did, based on the work and just wanting to make sure that we do have ample time for the opportunity, I've asked the board clerk to hold afternoon work sessions on Tuesday and Wednesday on folks' calendar, so that if we want to continue to have the space and feel the need to have those conversations, we have that space to do that. So we have some morning sessions on Tuesday and Wednesday, so we're just going to hold space on calendars to do that, and we can decide like the morning if we want to hold those afternoon sessions or not. But we want to make sure that we have time to have these conversations. I appreciate everybody leaning into this. I know that for this afternoon sessions, we have a hard stop at 3:30. And so just want to set that expectation. And I want to appreciate Sarah Ryan for sending out the email that was based on the board conversations about how to best organize our discussion on amendments this afternoon. So check that out before we reconvene. So thanks, everyone. That concludes today's regular board meeting. Our next meeting is our budget work session number 19, which is scheduled today at 1 p.m. There being no further business, the meeting is adjourned.